My name's Chris Kirk, and this is TW Talks, the interviews podcast from Free Weeks Edinburgh. I'm still talking to performers who have shows at this year's Edinburgh Festival, sitting down in the Assembly Club bar to talk past, present, and future. With each guest, we talk career so far, this year's show, and what is happening next. Today, Joe Trissini, whose show 10 Things I Hate About Me is on at Underbelly Bristow Square at this year's Edinburgh Festival. Let's get TW talking with Joe. So I am back in the club bar at Assembly. My next guest has joined me. Joe Trissini is here. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
End of the second week of The Fringe as we record this.
Yeah.
So kind of close to the home straight.
I've been told. I don't count. I just keep doing things until somebody tells me to stop.
Yeah. Until you show up one day at your venue and it's gone.
Yes, it's genuinely happened in the past and I'm sure it'll happen again.
It'll be back to a lecture hall. The history students in there.
Yeah, people will be learning about things that matter.
Yes. So we are here to talk past, present, and future.
Great.
We're really here to talk about your Edinburgh show. That's what the most important bit. But before we get to that, just interested in a very quick run through your career as a performer and as an actor and in comedy. That is kind of what the show is about. Let's not give too much away.
No. But it's very much about me. It's 10 things I hate about me, but also just everything else about me crammed in there as well, which has been a bit of a task because I'm not my favourite subject. But I have put as much of me as I can. It's certainly the most me thing I've ever done. And but it is about that. It's about my profession-wise, because I started as a magician. So I was two when I first did a magic trick and told a joke on stage. And I kept doing that for about 10 years. I was professional until I was 16.
So you were a child entertainer while you were a child?
Yes, yeah.
And you're photographic proof in the show?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, very much. Yeah, there's a lot more evidence that I have not made publicly available, Chris. I was a professional children's party entertainer and I was busy. And I loved doing it. I did genuinely love doing it. And I was busy. I was taken out of school when I was 14 and I was homeschooled by my cousin who had dropped out of university. So it wasn't the best pairing. And I did that for years and years and years. And then I achieved quite a lot in magic. I was the youngest British champion in ever, and I was in the magic circle and stuff like that. But I also grew out of it a little bit. So I went to musical theatre college, and then I wanted to do musicals.
So we'll get on to the acting stuff, because I think that's where a lot of people may have first seen you.
Gotcha.
The acting stuff. But I guess when you were doing that, I know you were very young. Well, I guess into your teenage years doing the magic show.
Yeah.
To what extent was there comedy in that show? Because it's quite common, isn't it, for magicians, the patter. Actually, you're as much stand-up as you are doing the tricks.
Very much so. I was never ever a silent dove magician. That was not my bag at all. And I think that and because of, the sort of people that I grew up around and stuff like that, I was very much a patter comedy magician, very much so. Because also you can talk your way out of anything then. So if anything goes wrong, you could. I still don't understand how magicians that don't talk get out of something going completely wrong. So I've always felt that if something is going wrong, you can get yourself out of it as easily as you can if you're a patter person.
I also think maybe if a UK audience, I don't know, maybe I'm being disparaging about our American friends, but I guess in the UK, the fact that you're being funny and doing the patter, because some people sort of find magic initially like, why am I coming to a magic show? And the minute you sort of make the fact that it's a bit unusual part of the act, you get over that.
Absolutely.
Rather than that sort of Vegas style, it's a big theatrical experience.
Yes, 100%. I think that's so true. And I think we're quite, as Brits, we're quite forgiving as well with things. we're overly polite. So even if an audience does see something going wrong, invariably they'll go, oh, it's fine. We'll just pretend that didn't happen. It's have a nice evening. So that definitely helped. So I've always had comedy as part of what I did. But I think also, because my dad's Joe Pasquale, as you know, and I think that part of my growing up, which happened far too late in my life, I sort of had to undo a lot of having my dad's personality, because I didn't have me in there anywhere, because my life was split up into being with dad at work and waiting to be with dad at work. So I took quite a lot of, from when I was 16 onwards, me trying to sort of separate myself to work out where I started and where dad finished, you know. So that took a long time. But yeah, it took longer than growing up in total, actually, to find that. But yeah, which again, not easy when me and dad essentially do the same thing. We do it very differently and in very different places, but we are in the same profession and we are, you know, very related. So yeah, so that's been a bit of a task over the years, but I feel like I did start doing that when I started to do the acting.
So yes, from magic to musicals.
Yes.
So you went to and musical theatre.
Yeah.
And then you then went into TV.
Yes.
And you did various, that's where people may have seen you at first in various TV programmes, yeah. Hollyoaks along the way.
Yes.
And I guess your show is obviously about some very difficult things that you've dealt with on that journey.
Yeah.
And it feels like maybe that was the period at which sort of the mental health challenges that you talk about,
yeah,
that really started to impact on your life.
Absolutely, Chris. Yeah, I think when I the first time I had mates was when I went to college in London, when I went to musical theatre college, and it was sort of on the other end of that when I started to get work that I realised I couldn't be on my own, because I'd been on my own for my childhood, because I'd you know, doing magic, you know, you don't get a lot of mates. So I realised that I had no way of functioning. I had no social skills and no way of living anywhere other than work. So I was fine at work, but then I'd get in and I'd start, you know, I was a drug addict at the time, and that took 10 years for my whole professional career, really. And that was, yeah, it took a very, very long time to realise that that was a problem and then actually try and start addressing it.
Because I guess on paper, your career was going well.
Oh, yeah.
So you know, in terms of your profile, it's all going very well. And
yeah,
then actually in yourself, it's not going.
Falling apart. God, yeah, absolutely. And I think that, and I was aware of that. But again, because I'd had no social skills, because I had no just life skills even. So I had no idea how to cope with money. And so money would come in and then I would just be like, well, that comes in again next week. So I'll just spend that. And that was something that lasted a good 18 years, living like that, which was, again, when you're self-employed, that's a nightmare. And I'm not great at learning lessons, Chris. So, you know, I'd do that and then I'd be like, oh, wow, that didn't end well. I'll do that again and change nothing and hope for the best. And not great for a decade. So that was a long road to work that way through that, you know. Especially when acting and anything in my career is so intermittent, you know. So that was something that was quite difficult because I also didn't know how to function without work. So if the time that you are falling apart is between when you get home and when you leave, when you've not got a job, you know, that just extended. When it went on for years, I just got worse and worse and worse. You know, I did manage to knock the drugs and the drink on the head now.
And you talk through that in the show.
Yes.
The rehab and how you managed to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I did. And whenever I do, but I try and keep everything in the show as nice to hear as possible, the whole energy, because there are some really difficult things I talk about, and I do, but I did laugh through them at the time, not every day obviously, but I always remember, I've always had a level of self-awareness which comes from my personality disorder, that I'm watching my own life to a certain extent, and like, it's an awful movie, but I still am used to it now, and I think that at the time I could always see the humour in what was happening. I just wasn't able to laugh at it myself, so that is something that started to come in later years, you know, not more recently, fell apart again, but that certainly when I started to get clean and sober and I started to sort my life out, that's when I started to go, okay, maybe I can do something with this. And then that was just before 2020, so that, which was not ideal.
It was not bad year for everybody.
Yes.
And that then had an impact. I guess another place in which people have almost certainly seen your work, other than the TV work, is in their social feeds.
Yeah.
Because you started posting.
Yeah.
And as you talk about in the show, a combination of sort of silly stuff, some of which went massively viral.
Yes.
But also talking about these experiences and the mental health challenges in a very candid way.
Yeah. And I mean, the mental health stuff I'd started to talk about because I'd gotten to a place where I knew it would help me to talk about it publicly as well, because I knew that I'm not good at much, Chris, but I know there are things that I can do, and talking to people about stuff like that is one of them. So I knew that I was going to be doing that, and I'd started to do that for a while. When the lockdown started, I'm also an idiot, as you said, we've met, you know, you can see this. And I, my girlfriend and I did that silly dance just because we wanted to. And
this was a video that went viral just as the pandemic was starting.
It was the first day. Yeah. It was the 24th of March. Yes. And I was at her mum and dad's house, and I was locked down there. Bless them, for 4 months they had to live with me. And I was, and we did this dance, and it went viral around the world, and it gave us something to do for 4 months. And it was lovely and mental, ironically. But then, because obviously I was then coping with the lockdown, and because I was in a habit of talking about mental health online anyway, I started to talk very, very honestly about, you know, my thoughts, and I have very dark thoughts as suicide and things like that. So I started to talk about that and was honest about that. And the two things sort of hand in hand sort of both sort of complemented each other in a way that was not intended, that I only realised retrospectively, which was essentially that, you know, I had this awful thing going on in my head, but I was still running around like an idiot, and you can do both things. And I wasn't aware of that at the time. But that is nice. But it's also then a challenge when you are doing a show like this, is because you don't know which one of those audiences is coming to see you. So it's about trying to inform the other of the other. And then by the end, everybody understand and care about both. So that's been one of my things that I've been focusing on while I've been up here. But
well, let's talk more about the show, 10 yeah. Things I Hate About Me. So actually, this, as I understand it, this show has been quite a long time in the making.
Yeah. I mean, I started writing it in February 2020 for all of the reasons I just said, because I'd gotten to a point where I was like, I knew that my talents were performing and stuff, and I thought let's do stand up, let's go to Edinburgh. So I did one work in progress 2 weeks before the world shut down, and then after all of the lockdowns, I stopped being able to perform. Panic attacks took over my life, It took many, many years for me to be able. I never gave up on it, which still seems mental that I didn't. And I can't believe that I did keep going. I'm proud of myself for still doing it. And I think the show now is much better for it than it would have been 5 years ago when I started.
5 year wait.
Yeah, absolutely.
So quickly explain, so it's 10 things I hate about me.
Yes.
So basically the show is structured into 10 things that you talk through. So maybe talk us through that format.
It's because I live with something called borderline personality disorder, which has got 9 symptoms. So you only need 5 of them to be diagnosed with it. I've got all 9 because I'm an addict, obviously. And I, so the show is basically formed in me trying to show the audience what it is like to live with something like this by just using myself and my life as a massive example.
And with each of those 9 things, you're then telling stories from your life to sort of illustrate how it impacted on you.
Yeah, essentially, it's more often than not, it's the first time that I ever felt that symptom, basically, is how it works out. And so it's not, it's something that I've just tried to make it as fun and as easily ingested as possible, because these things are not, you know, it took me a long time to try and get information I understood about my personality disorder, and also mental stuff has happened to me, and I've done mental stuff. So I've tried to match the two up in an experience that isn't too hard to watch. The audience is my main priority, and their comfort is the most important thing to me.
And I thought that let's not reveal too much, because people should come see the show, but I thought at the start you did a little introduction, and I guess, again, as you said, you don't know whether the audience have come knowing this is very much a subject you're going to talk about, or whether they just love your videos, well, silly videos on social, or maybe they know you from your TV work.
Yeah.
And I really like the way you sort of introduced the show to sort of set out, yes, we're going to cover some serious stuff, but it's fine.
Yeah.
It's not a traumatic experience, and it's going to be very funny along the way.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, the worst thing about life is the surprise of it. So, when I know things are coming, and if I plan, I can feel better about stuff, and I enjoy things more if I know what I'm doing. So that's an experience that I'm trying to give out. I'm trying to give all of the coping mechanisms I use, I try to, in some way, give the audience to be able to help them through my show. And I think that that makes all of us more comfortable. Because it just feels for me like the best way to get a message like this across, because it's uncomfortable talking about mental health. It makes people uncomfortable, and I am uncomfortable, and that is the one feeling I do not want to give an audience. And speaking as somebody that's had panic attacks in front of audiences and has made them uncomfortable, that's not what I'm doing here, you know. And I'm very proud of my show. I didn't know that I would feel like this about it. I'm thrilled. It could have gone either way, and I am very, very pleased that I am. Because also, I think the other thing is that obviously there are 2 groups of people that know me, but there are a much bigger group that don't. And so that was really important.
Yeah, the random fringe audience.
Yeah.
Just like your poster.
Absolutely. Random fringe, also known as the general public. There are a vast majority of them haven't got a clue who I am. And so that was another important thing for me, is that people coming in going, what are you on about? That don't know either of the things.
Yeah.
That everybody's on the same page quite quickly. Whether they like it or not at the end is up to them. But I do feel that I am doing something that I enjoy every day and that I am proud of. Yeah.
In those 5 years that this show was in development,
yeah,
two of which we were basically shut down with COVID,
yeah.
But there was also the book came along.
Yes.
So how did the book happen?
The book happened because I was, when the lockdowns were going on and I was still talking about it and I was doing the idiot dancing, I got a book deal, and it was a really big deal, and I was so excited about it. But then as I started to write it, I realised there had been a problem, because I had not processed the severity of the world situation. But everybody went back to normal. So as I was writing my first self-help book, my mental health fell off a cliff. And so that was the start of a struggle that I had not anticipated, because I'd been trying to get a book deal for years. So as soon as I had all of the opportunities that I'd been waiting for.
And a tight deadline.
And a very tight deadline. Yes, six months that I was like, I'll do it in three. Yeah. Everything started to cave in around me, which didn't help. And again, I think that the part of the book that was, because it was the show that started, that was what the idea was. So then I sort of adapted that as I realised I couldn't do the show either. So I started to do that, but then it all started to take much longer than anticipated, Chris. Got there in the end, as I always do. But yeah, no, and I talk about that because the book situation went off the wall in ways that I could never have imagined.
Would you talk about the show?
Very much. No, I won't talk about it now. No.
We're getting to the home straight of the fringe now. So yeah. Do you have future plans? Because, I mean, I think the show... it's very entertaining, very funny, but also has some incredibly important, I mean, someone who only has a very vague knowledge of mental health, and we talk more about mental health now than we did 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But I think we talk about it sometimes in quite a confusing way.
Yeah.
And I think you really present it in a really compelling way. So it's the plan to try and make as many people see this show as possible.
Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate what you said there. And yeah, you've put it, that's a really lovely way of putting it. And I do want people to see it. I enjoy doing it and I would love people to see it. That's my main thing. I mean, I didn't get into this because I'm good at marketing and it's not one of my strong points, but I do desperately want to do it for as many people as I can. So that, if you, and you know, future thinking is quite a new experience for me. And I'm really glad that I'm in a place where I'm able to do it and to want to think about the future as well. So yeah, I really desperately want as many people to see this as possible.
What was your experience of the Edinburgh Fringe before you came to do this show?
Zero. Never even been to it as a normal person. Yeah, no. So I'd heard about it. And again, I've wanted to do it for 20 years because I've, growing up in the family, that I grew up in, I wanted to be where comedy was. So it's just something that I've never got around to. So I've had no first-hand experience. Everybody I asked that did said that it's great, but it's hard. I now agree and understand. And even on the harder days, it's something that I do keep reminding myself that I'm here.
Yeah.
This is, and it's an amazing thing to be a part of up here.
And do you think, obviously, a lot of performers and comedians, once you've done it once, it can become in your calendar every year and you keep coming back. I mean, can you see yourself, whether that's just bringing this show for a second run or, is there another hour of things you would like to share with the world at a future festival?
I think that it's one of those things. I mean, yeah, I'm not great for starting something and being able to stop it, Chris, historically. But I think that I'm here because I've got something to say. And I think that if I've got something else to say, this would be a place that I would come. But only if it was something that I felt I was ready to do and that I wanted to do. So, yeah, I'd absolutely come back. But I'd only come back if I was saying something that I felt that I needed to be done.
So that will depend possibly on what happens in the world or what happens in your life or combination.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, because I think just me being comfortable and happy is always the priority. I think, especially when I'm, keep being the only person doing something in a room. And if I'm going to ask people to watch me, I've got to be saying something and doing something that makes me feel like I'm in the right place at the right time, so which I definitely am at the moment. So if that happens again, whether it's doing this or something else, absolutely I'd come back here because people have really looked after me and it's been a lovely experience on the most part.
So people do still have an opportunity to see the show. So let's do the listing information. The where and the what time of the day, all that stuff.
It's on at 8:25 in the evening at Underbelly Bristow Square in Ermyntrude. And I'm there till the 24th of August. And so please come if you can.
And finally, where do people find you online?
Oh, I'm on Instagram at Joe Tresini. I'm also on Twitter and X. Not that I go there much because it's terrifying. Joe Tresini as well. And that's it. And you can Google me, but there's some weird stuff, so don't do that.
So maybe Instagram's the best place to start.
Definitely where I'm at.
Yeah. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for asking me. Thanks,
Chris. Thank you.